Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. It has been quite a while since we've done a podcast, but let me quickly do an introduction. I'm Chad Sherwood, your host up here at the top center. We have Matt Zukowski and John Tytel to my sides. Rocco Miller straight below me. Check him out at bracketeer.org as well, and on Twitter, where he posts every single schedule and every single schedule news you could possibly imagine wanting, the number one source for schedules. His sides, we've got Mike Chott and the puppet David Griggs.
Yes,
So welcome back.
we
It
are
has
here.
we do a we try to do a podcast every month during the summer, and so this is our July and August podcast all in one. Correct, David?
I suppose. Or this, I don't know if this is our July or the August podcast. I
Well,
really don't know how
it's
we're going to
August
title them.
17th when we're recording this, so I think it's a
It's the August podcast. We might have August part two next week or something. Who
who
knows?
knows.
Get back
We're
on
closer to
schedule.
the start of next season than the end of last season, so that's encouraging.
That is good news. Yes.
In fact, if you look over there on the website, we've got the countdown clock running. We are, as we record this right now, 83 days, 14 hours, and 43 minutes away from the start of the season. Still more than 2 months. It's a little ways off, but
Yeah. Well, we got exhibition games starting in about 70 days. Well, actually, probably less than that.
But I guess it's kind of been a slow summer. There's been a few pieces of news, but it's probably kind of been a slower summer than normal. That might be why we've been on here less, but we wanted to get something up, so we're just going to kind of all talk at you for about half an hour or so and see what happens,
I
I
was in
think.
jail. I was in jail.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess, I mean, the big news across college basketball, I think, from the summer has been the what might be the soon to come death of the Big 12 entirely, as Texas and Oklahoma off to the SEC. If you haven't read about this, I think you've been living under a rock or something. Tytel, let me start with you. Any thoughts on what this huge move here is going to do for the future of college athletics and conferences, and maybe even more for basketball, even than anything else, because that's what we're supposed to be discussing.
Sure. The short answer is I don't know. I don't think anybody knows for sure, but the conferences I think are going to be subject to some major realignment. We've already seen in the course of 1 year, the WAC has changed almost completely. And as you said, there's a lot of schools thinking about making a super conference maybe. I've heard the Pac-12 is thinking about allying with other conferences to try to combat the SEC. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I think unfortunately, because I like things the way they are, that we might see some very momentous, enormous changes in the years and decades to come.
Sorry, David, you have a thought?
Well, I have many thoughts. I guess I don't think this is being driven by basketball, maybe a little bit, but I think it's more football purposes, football ambitions, than anything else.
Well,
What?
all conference moves in college athletics are football
Right.
driven. I think we can
Well,
all accept
at least if you're
Financially,
talking about
football
the
drives the
power
bus.
conferences.
You could say that, but it's football that drives the bus.
Yeah, at least when you're talking about the power conferences, you're probably right. And not only football driving the bus, but the structure of football. You, if you're not in the right conference, the door may be not be open to you. Whereas in college basketball, regardless of what league you're in, you at least have a path to the NCAA. Anyway, that's another rant. What I don't, when I look at this, and we've seen the card shuffle and the sort of this realignment really going on since the early 2000s, and probably even before that, when you go back to when the SEC went out to 12, even, and who knows, it's probably nothing new. But the one thing I would like to just observe is who is really better off, either conference-wise or just institution-wise, since realignment. Is Nebraska any bigger than they were before? I would argue that they're not. Is Miami any bigger now in football or basketball than they were when they were in the Big East? I would argue that they were not.
I'll take the counterfeiture of that, David, actually.
Okay.
Are they better in football? No. Are they making more money now? Hell yes.
But wouldn't they have made more money anyway? Like had the ACC, just suppose, stayed with its classic nine team format, or what I would consider the classic nine team format, would it be any less rich than it is today?
I think the answer is yes, it would be a lot less rich. It doesn't, wouldn't have the amount of content to sell, wouldn't have its own network.
It could have its own network. I mean, what's stopping them from having their own network?
There won't be any games to show on it because you only have four games a week in football.
There'd be plenty of games.
Well,
yeah, they all still play each other every week. But the net game, I mean, what is it that Texas and Oklahoma are going to get that they don't already have? And from the standpoint of Texas, you mentioned money. The Longhorn Network, are they get what happens to that? Are they going to keep that as a property? Like, I just don't know if anyone's landed in a substantially more street cred place after realignment than they did before. And but I don't know. And then it seems to be this keeping up with the Joneses. Well, if the Big Ten's going out to 14, then we need to go to 16. Why? No,
well,
you don't.
Well, maybe the next step, Rocco, you are a Pac-12 guy. I've heard a few rumblings. Can we talk about a Pac-20 with the rest of the Big 12 all jumping over there?
Yeah, Chad, I don't foresee that happening. I think we have a great sports writer out here, John Wilner. He works for the San Jose Mercury, writes a lot of articles on this. He said it best when the only way the Pac-12 would expand in its current form would be if the not only adding slices to the pie, but do the slices of pie actually get bigger? And that's the way every institution is going to look at expansion, whether it's the Pac-12 or otherwise. And I think when you look at the 8 leftover Big 12 schools, it's really hard to prove that the slices of pie would get bigger on top of all of the other Pac-12 traditions in terms of education and Olympic sports and everything else. I think what's more likely from what we know today is we start to see, of course, football drives all of this, but we start to see more of like a semi-pro type of football alliance formed. Who knows what it ends up looking like in the end, but what is known today as the Power Five would certainly represent most of that. Unfortunately, maybe for some of our Pac-12 friends like Oregon State, Washington State, and kind of bottom of the totem pole revenue-wise programs, they could get left out. From some of the proposals out there, you see Washington, Oregon, the LA schools, and perhaps Arizona State, but there's still a lot to be figured out with how many teams, where is the cutoff, right? Like, do we do a semi-pro league with like 36 schools, and then there's like a tier two group where the rest of the Pac-12 and the rest of the Big 12 end up? And that's a lot of stuff that consequently will impact college basketball. But perhaps through all this, it's going to be a big reform. We'll talk about NCAA and Alston later. But I think through all of this, you're going to see an opportunity for college basketball to maybe build their own coalition to try to keep some of these teams intertwined together for more geographical college basketball purposes. So it's kind of what I'm hanging on for. We just have a lot to uncover.
And I think that's probably a real good lead in actually to our next topic, which is, you're talking about semi-pro. We're talking about the name, image, and likeness rules that are coming out there. Matt, let me bring you in on this here. We're already starting to see some of the money that's being paid to some of these college athletes already, and some of the stuff that's been revealed. So your thoughts on what we're starting to see already with all these changes?
Oh, no, I've always been a strong proponent of the NIL, and I'm glad that, hey, listen, these kids, there's clearly been a market, whether underground or now a little more above board for that. And even as things like the Overtime Elite League, the G League Ignite were coming in, the NIL comes hopefully just in time to work, keep some of these kids in college. We're like, and Jalen Duren, who just committed to Memphis, I think because he's going to get some NIL money, he'll stay in college. I know, was it Nick Smith, a top 10 recruit in the 2022 class, basically had offers of like $500,000 to join the G League Ignite or the Overtime Elite, but he's going to play college ball because he'll get a good chunk for doing that instead and still get the best exposure, I think, is still with college basketball.
Yeah, well, Mike, I don't know how much you've been following this as well. Maybe Matt has a good point here. We may see kids staying longer in college because there's a chance to make the money here.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, knowing that, hey, you can accept money from an outside source and still retain your eligibility, I think it changes the game tremendously. And I think that, I think if anything, it's going to increase the divide between the haves and the have-nots. If you're with the Power Five school, knowing they have the larger fan bases and wealthy donors, that that the top athletes are going to even going to go there even more.
And
Sorry, David, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, to piggyback off of what Mike just said, I'm not making any predictions as to whether he's right or it might go the other way. Because when you look at an under-the-radar school, the idea of name, image, and likeness is, especially in a sport like basketball anyway, it's going to be driven by star power. And you might be a good key player. You might be a really good key player, but if you're at a Power 5 program, you're not the star the way you would be at, say, a Missouri Valley school, an Ohio Valley school, a Summit League school. Is there potentially, and I don't know the answer. I'm not saying that it is or it isn't, but the thought has crossed my mind that players seeking maximum NIL, name, image, and likeness dollars, might feel like there's more to be made if they're a star at a non-Power school. I'd be interested to hear Rocco's opinion on that. Because he follows both he follows both the under the radar and over the radar.
Yeah, David, I see what you mean. I mean, you look at Pat Baldwin, he's going to Milwaukee this year, right? So that's a great case study, playing for his father and in a league like that. But they're already, they're already getting some great opportunities schedule wise. They'll get to play against Florida, and they got a game with Rhode Island earlier today. I think he'll get all the opportunity to be a star there. You're right. I think when you go to a Kentucky or a Blue Blood, you also have that opportunity. Like if you're that good, you'll still get that chance. You know, we saw Jermaine Wiggins at Kansas. I mean, we have thousands of those examples, right?
They're
examples. So it really just, I think, depends on the kid. And if you're good enough to be in the league, they're going to find you. You know, we saw a Serbian-born player from the Patriot League get picked in the first round this year. The basketball people are getting smarter and smarter every year with their evaluations. And so I think for the kid, it's just about them and what's going to work for them. But I think that opportunity – I'm glad you brought it up. So I think that opportunity is more likely than ever. And you'll already see, like, Tennessee State out there in Ohio Valley. I think they've already got a couple
of four stars. Did you see that guy? Wow.
Yeah.
The deal he signed,
masterpiece.
That's really interesting, though. Tytel, I want to get your thoughts on that as well. You know, are we going to start seeing? Hey, you know, come play at whatever school, Duke, Kentucky, whatever you want to choose. Because when you come to play here, you know, Jim's Shoe Stop Store will pay you $1 million a year for your name, image, and likeness. And we're really just paying them to come to this particular school, and that's all we're doing by calling it NIL.
Yeah, I was going to talk a little more about Tennessee State because I'm really worried that it sets up a dangerous, perhaps, imbalance. So their head coach, Brian Penny Collins, got his first deal 3 years ago from the school. He said it was his dream job, $200,000 a year. So his new player, incoming freshman, Hersey Miller, signed a $2 million NIL deal with Web Apps America. And obviously, like, if he was like a McDonald's All-American guy, I don't think he'd go to Tennessee State, although there is the occasional Pat Baldwin Jr., like Rocco said. But how does a coach making this much money with a player with an NIL deal for like 10 times as much money, how does it work in terms of, oh, you have to sit on the bench, oh, you don't have to play or practice with the other guys? Like, I'm worried that it sets up a very dangerous precedent, perhaps.
Yeah. It's like, shut up. I make five times what you make. I'll tell you when I play. I mean, I can see that type of story happening.
That is an interesting, I don't know how that's going to play out. I never thought when name, image, and likeness went into place that we would see a player making more than their coach, much less 10 times more than their coach, a $2 million deal at Tennessee State. I am flabbergasted.
I guess I'm less concerned about that because I get it at the professional ranks, you get a little bit more older average age people in there, but it's the same thing there. You could have a player make 10 times more than the coach. It's still up to that coach to get control of the locker room, maintain that player's success. If Tennessee State goes off the rails and Penny Collins and this kid don't get along, he's going to tell him to transfer. It's going to be a business relationship. And that's what college basketball has always been. It's just now we're going to have W-2s for the first time. So let's just be real. I'm less worried about it. I think it's going to help these kids actually grow up faster. And I think that's what's going to make it an overall positive experience long-term in their lives, which is what coaches are supposed to be in it for.
Yeah.
Well, I think what we're also seeing here is kind of, Matt, let me bring you back in here. We're seeing kind of the death of the entire way the NCAA had been run for years. Throw in there the Alston case with the United States Supreme Court coming in and saying that, you know, the NCAA was violating antitrust laws on top of that, and in the way they were limiting money to that was being paid to student athletes.
I mean, but the NCAA has been a day late and a dollar short for years upon years on this. And oh, I think only now they're coming to the realization of, wait a minute, the landscape's totally about to change. And they finally might make a semi-proactive move here, that some talks to Mark Ebert of, like, this fall, winter, maybe that they're going to totally reshape it to where they're no longer trying to get the school to, hey, they're paying players as much as all to where it was with a half snicker as much as, yeah, like, you wanted things fair. You knew they weren't. And now, hopefully be real with things and forget the enforcement of that and maybe focus strictly on things like academics and not worry that, hey, school A is paying one guy $500,000 or school B's paying $250,000 under the table.
And that's kind of it. Maybe it's just, you know, nice and easy. We just pay everybody above the table now and that's it. Because is that where we're going?
It does remove the shadiness of the under the table dealings, like Matt said, but I still think it's a dangerous precedent, because does it become the school with the biggest, most billionaire alumni get to pay the best players to come there? Or has it always been that way, but it was just always under the table? And like, if a guy who's making who has a $2 million NIL deal, but is not happy with his coach or his playing time or his results, I don't want to see kids transferring every single year. I know we kind of already have that on some levels, but like, I just want to see like the way it is. Like, you go to the school because they are a good fit for you and you play your hardest. And if you want to go to the NBA after a year, that's fine. And if you're a 4-year player, even better, and you build the loyalty and you like get the teamwork and everything. And I know it is old fashioned now, because that's not the world we're living in, but I hope that it doesn't ruin the sport, because I didn't think the sport was so broken to begin with.
And that's really interesting. Mike, your thoughts. Are we heading to a position where a couple of years down the line from this, as this comes more and more to play, we're just going to see a completely new way that the entire NCAA model looks?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, both football and men's basketball, I mean, just, or even the NCAA in general, it's never going to be the same. It's never going to be as we know it. I mean, I can't help but think, but like, basketball is basically NBA light or junior version of the NBA, or instead of a coach's league, it becomes more of a player's league, because now you can have a player making a lot more money than the coach, and you know, kind of like, hey, I'm making all this money, I'll blow off the coach.
Yeah. David, I was just wondering, do we need like a new set of rules here? Maybe we just, let's take football, let's take basketball, let's separate them out from the rest of what's going on in the NCAA. I get that, you know, the NCAA gets a lot of their money from basketball, but let's set up how they're ruled, and you know, we could take the other Olympic sports and kind of toss them over to the other side here, and maybe try to keep them under the same way we'd be running things. But basketball and football are its own little thing now, and that's it.
Okay, it's interesting that you say that. Basketball and football are different. Like, revenue sports are different, if you've ever been in and around the athletic department, but every sport is different in its own way. On principle, I've been for this for a long time. On principle, on practicality, now it's here. And I have the same questions and concerns that the rest of you have, whether you supported it or not. I think we all have the same questions and concerns. Will there be a bigger imbalance and a competitive imbalance than there already is? Will it result in sort of a Wild West? Will you have, like you said, these car dealership and billionaire boosters paying anybody and everybody and stockpiling players just to, you know, for doing their laundry or something like that, name, image, and likeness? But beyond that, and this is something that's kind of below the sideline, I know that this is going to sound funny to say, but in response to what you just said, Chad, I think that overall on this, like, what's going to be visible is the key players in the revenue sports, your men's basketball and football players. But the most athletes that will benefit this, I think, are the country club sports and the Olympic sports. They might not be making as much, but you couldn't work at a country club before. You can now. You can give lessons now. You can give lessons to whoever you want if you play tennis or softball or soccer or swimming or whatever. And I don't want this to come off sounding the wrong way, but I don't know how else to say it. I think female student athletes, especially those of a certain body type, are going to have opportunities that your role players and even revenue sports are not going to have. I think that this benefits a lot of the Olympic sports more than most people realize. If for no other reason, they don't have to clear what they want to do over the summer for work with the compliance office anymore.
And I think we've already seen some big contracts speaking up to some women's basketball players to begin with. I know. I did read about a few of them at least. So it's coming there as well. We mentioned the Ulster case briefly. Rocco, I think you said you want to discuss that as well, the Supreme Court's decision.
Oh, yes. This is the – oh, go ahead, Rocco.
I can kick it off. I'm sure everybody's got thoughts. I guess it was a little surprised that it was a 9-0 vote. I thought there would at least be a little bit of divide on it. So that just shows, after the appeal and all the process that had been going on the last few years, that the writing was on the wall. I see a lot of criticism to the NCAA for this. And obviously the amount of money and lawyer fees is a big topic. But at the same time, I mean, the NCAA strategy to me was clear all along, to kick the can down the road as long as they possibly could to protect their, it is what it is. It's essentially a cartel, and keep amateurism alive as long as they could. So if it had to be 2021 summer, great. It was better than it happening in 2020 summer, because that's another year of $9 billion in an NCAA tournament and everything else they make money off of. So I think they've just seen it coming for so long. You also saw on the day before the new year of NCAA, I think it was June 30th, they finally put out a statement on how to handle NIL, which was free for all the next morning. So I don't think any of that was done without planning. I think it was all very much well-planned and strategized by the NCAA.
Yeah. Matt, you had thoughts on that too?
Well, I was just saying, Rocco is exactly right in that the plan all along has been to kick the can down the road as long as possible. But I disagree. So, if they had some more foresight on this, I think they could have actually come up with something a little better than where it might not have been so much the Wild West as now that, hey, I got no issue with, because like I said, NCAA had zero foresight on it. So they reap what they sowed. And in this case, hey, you tried to cover your eyes and say, oh, this isn't happening. Now that these players have had value for a while now, and with an open market, we're seeing it. And I'm glad that at least like I said, it's getting a little bit more above board. And hey, it doesn't have to necessarily be the $200,000 in shoe boxes or whatever.
Well, and they have put together, Tytel, a constitution committee for the NCAA Board of Governors. It's chaired by Robert Gates, former U.S. Secretary of Defense and President of Texas A&M, former President of Texas A&M, actually. But, the idea here to be of this committee allegedly is to basically figure out how to rebuild the entire NCAA model, more or less, is the way I'm reading it, at least.
Same. They have a huge task ahead of them. That's why they had to, and they didn't make it a 2 or 3 man committee. They made it a 23, 24 person committee, and they're going to need the rest of the year to try to get it done. I got invited to a Zoom call with Penn State Vice President for Intercollegiate Athletics, Sandy Barber, this weekend. So I'm going to try to see if I can get some answers about it. But Herculean task, I mean, is a strong word, but I think it really is, because it is unprecedented and they have so many challenges. Again, I didn't think it was so broken to begin with. Obviously, other people disagree because they now have 24 people working on a way to rewrite the Constitution. But I wish them the best of luck, because there's a lot of things they need to put in it and get it right the first time.
We should, when you meet with her, tell her that Hoops HD will join that committee.
Well, he actually said 24, because I think he counted for the email I sent around with the list. Somehow David Griggs got added to the list on one of the emails here. But
I will rewrite the Constitution. It will be amazing.
But quite honestly, David, that's all I had on my list of topics for today. Did I miss anything?
We covered quite a bit. That's a lot for a summer show.
Let me run through each of you for any other thoughts on anything related to college basketball that you have seen so far this offseason that you're looking forward to as we head a little bit closer towards next season. Mike, let me start with you.
I'm looking forward to Michigan basketball. I'm biased, of course, but you know, Michigan's kind of become more of a basketball school more than a football school. So. who would have thought that would happen? But but seriously, I'm interested to see, especially with NIL, how that's going to affect the game going forward. I mean,
absolutely, Rocco.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty curious about you know, all the transfer portal movement. It's going to make it a very difficult season to predict. I think, you know, you look at a team like Texas, for example. They hire Chris Beard and they just clean house in the portal. Like Marcus Carr and Trey Mitchell just in the last few weeks. It's crazy. They go from a team in transition to a team that's like, no, we're here to win now. Then you look at a team like South Alabama out of the Sun Belt, loaded up with four SEC players, a Big 12 player, VMI's best player in Parham. All of a sudden, South Alabama goes from probably around 100 to 150 ranked team to a possible bubble team. I think there's just going to be a lot of those out there, like UNLV cleaned house, UAB cleaned house. So really curious about that. For mid-majors / under-the-radar reasons, I'm excited for a lot of those schools because they got after it and took advantage. And I'm also excited to kind of see some of these new coaches in their new home. I think we were able to touch on a couple at the end of last season, but I do think, you know, just even some of the smaller stories like Portland hiring Chauncey Lagans from Eastern Washington. I think a lot of people asked the question, why would he take that job? I think the real question is, why did Portland even go after him? Well, there's a new commitment financially to Portland basketball being successful. And they're giving him every opportunity to succeed and building facilities and resources around him. And there's a lot of cool stories like that happening here at San Jose State for Tim Miles. Those guys wouldn't have taken those jobs if there wasn't a commitment to finances. So I think the NIL thing and all the things we talked about before are playing into some of these programs that have been dead for years, actually getting rejuvenated and have new interest and more money, maybe, you know, corporate or however the money's coming in. But it's going to create some new stories that are going to be different. And I think that's good for the game.
Absolutely. I agree.
Tim Miles is good for the game. I very, very much.
Let me jump to Matt next, actually.
Well, I was saying, Rocco brought up one of the two topics I was thinking of in Texas. The other one is Memphis. It's like, we saw this story a couple of years ago with James Wiseman that, and it did not have a happy ending. But here we are back again, Memphis. They just got a kid who was probably the top player in 2022 before he reclassified, Jalen Duren, and are supposed to be the favorites for Imani Bates, the longtime number one player in 2022, and he would also move on this year. So if you get those two kids, you still bring back Lester Quiotis, Landers Nolly, on that, Alex Lomax, Tyler Harris. Like, can Penny do it this time? Because I think pressure, even though he's the local kid, he's got a pretty long rope with the fans there. Pressure will be on now, especially after they did a little bit of a flirtation with the Orlando Magic this offseason. That, hey, on paper, they should be really good and probably right with Houston at the top of the AAC. But if it doesn't happen now, I wonder, is the homecoming fully over for Penny at Memphis?
Oh, they could be. They've had amazing talent and not the encore.
Underachieved.
Yeah, extremely. John.
Two things. Rocco had talked about the transfer market. There's still some pieces out there, despite the fact that most of the good ones are gone. I point you to a couple of juniors, Nelly Cummings from Colgate. He scored 14 points against Arkansas in the tournament last March. I believe he's still available. And then Casey Ndefo out of St. Peter's, two-time defending conference defensive player of the year. If you need shot blocking, yeah, he's your guy. Additionally, as far as teams, there's been a lot of realignment. There's not a ton of new teams this year. There is one. I'm very excited for the St. Thomas Tommies to kick off this fall, especially because I know they're making the leap, so it doesn't always transfer, but does anybody know how many games they lost last year?
I don't know that they really lost any.
I should have said zero. D3 didn't even play.
They went 7-0 last year.
Oh, yeah. It's a very, very unique situation. You normally have to go through about a 5-year process of D2 to go from D3 to D1. They got a special waiver because their conference at D3 – threw them out because they were too good in football. This is a true story. They got thrown out of their conference in football because of how good they were. And they got a special waiver from the NCAA to skip D2 and go straight to D1 after the Summit League agreed to take them in. But David, let me run over
to you. Yeah, just to clarify, they do have to reclassify D1. So yeah, there will be the transition. Yeah, they do have to go through the transition, but it's exciting to have them. Welcome to D1. Tommy's, what was the question?
Final thought.
Yeah, we talked more about name, image, and likeness than we did the Alston case. I think the Alston case is every bit as cataclysmic, especially when the opinion that Brett Kavanaugh wrote that said, not only is it 9-0, not only does this violate antitrust, but you all could have gotten a lot more than what you asked for. So feel free to pursue it into the future. I'm paraphrasing, but how else could you have read that opinion? And we talk about, big time boosters using NIL end arounds to pay players. Maybe if they pursue it again, would we even need end arounds if the rule is made that colleges can now pay schools players directly?
I believe the phrase was used in their exploitation of student athletes. That's how harsh of a decision it was. Absolutely. But I guess on that note, I do want to take the chance to thank everybody for joining us. We'll be back probably sometime in September with a podcast. Maybe it'll be October. Maybe it'll be January for all we know. But I think we'll be back next month. But on behalf of Rocco Miller, check him out again at bracketeer.org and on Twitter. Mike Cha and David Griggs to his side. Matt Sikowski and John Titel to my sides. I'm Chad Sherwood. This has been Hoops HD's July/August podcast. And we'll talk to you again next month. And now I got to find the stop button, which I cannot.
Good find. Ending. Is anybody still watching? We're not stopping.